Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Tony, let's talk Bears-Eagles.
So the Bears win, and we know now who their opponent is going to be. It's going to be the defending Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles. So I wanted to give you an opportunity to get a scouting report on the Eagles. So I reach out to one of my family from NBC Sports, NBC Sports Philly. Since I'm doing the pregame show on NBC Sports Chicago, I thought I'd reach out to someone who works on the show for NBC Sports Philly. Derek Gunn covers the Eagles, and he joins me now here on The Score. Derek, thanks for joining me tonight. I appreciate it.
No problem, man. How you doing today?
I'm doing really well. And a few weeks ago, I actually tweeted out that I didn't want the Eagles to get into the playoffs because of some of the special things they've done over the last couple of years. And with Nick Foles, he seems to have that fairy dust around him that makes this team go. So first things first, how is Nick Foles and is he expected to play next week?
Well, according to head coach Doug Peterson, who had his Monday press conference with the media, all tests came back clear. He is sore, but Nick Foles will start against the Bears this coming Sunday.
Okay, so what is it about him? Why does the Eagles' offense look differently when he's under center versus Carson Wentz?
That's one thing we still can't figure out. For whatever reason, I think in Nick Foles' case, I think he does a better job than Carson in terms of getting everybody involved with the offense. At times, Carson can lock on the targets a little bit too much, in particular Zach Ertz. But when Nick is under center, everybody better have their head on a swivel because you never know when he's going to come to you. He's probably the most cerebral person you ever wanted to meet. He doesn't get high on himself. He never gets low when there's down times. He's more even-keeled than most guys you'll see playing that position, and he makes very few mistakes. A couple of weeks ago against Houston, he throws for a team record 471 yards in a regular season game. Then he comes back Sunday against the Redskins and ties the NFL record for 25 consecutive completions. Just when you think you've seen a Nick Foles do it all, he does something a little bit more.
It's amazing to me because we're talking about a guy who really was contemplating retiring a couple yes. years ago. How did he go from that to Super Bowl MVP?
Well, he was on the brink of retirement, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, Howie Roseman calls him and says, "Hey, Nick, we could use you here." Now, you have to understand, we've just drafted this quarterback named Carson Wentz. He's our franchise quarterback. But because of Nick's love for this city and the organization, this was the organization that drafted him. This was the organization that nurtured him. And because of how the fan base has embraced him, especially over the last year plus, Nick Foles just has a connection with the city of Philadelphia. Here he is, this Texas guy who went to Arizona and by way of Arizona finds himself in Philly. He just loves the energy in his city. He loves the passion of the fans in his city. And Philadelphia is the type of city, it's an either-or city. Either they love you or they don't. And they definitely love Nick Foles, everything about him, both on and off the field.
Talking with Derek Gunn, who covers the Philadelphia Eagles for NBC Sports Philly. You can follow him on Twitter at RealDGunn, two N's, NBCS. So what's been the common denominator in this kind of run that the Eagles have been on to get to the playoffs?
I think the common denominator has been the head coach. These guys will run through a brick wall for Doug Peterson. Doug Peterson, having been a former NFL player, the one guy that they really appreciate about him is he knows when to push them. He knows when to back off and let them rest their bodies. And over the past several weeks, in particular, when it was down to crunch time, when they were about to play the Rams and then about to play the Houston Texans, he gave them extra time off. And people are like, wait a minute, you've got crucial games coming up. But players always talk about how the way he treats them like grown men. He doesn't treat them like a bunch of college frat guys. He's professional. He gets on them when he has to. He has a players committee. He listens to his players. I can remember coming out of that embarrassment of a game against the Saints when Malcolm Jenkins told him and the coaching staff, we need to simplify things. You know, it's too complicated for a lot of these young guys that you're asking to play in the back end. And because coaches listen to the players respect that. The players have input. The players have suggestions that that Doug and Jim Schwartz take to heart. And they take those suggestions and they implement them, whether they're locker room policies, practice policies, or game policies. And because of that, these guys will do any and everything they can for Doug Peterson.
It's so funny to hear you say that, because if I just put in the name Matt Nagy, it would be the same thing. And I think these two teams really mirror each other very well, which is kind of got me concerned for the Bears because there are so many similarities. Did Doug Peterson say anything today about Matt Nagy?
Well, somebody asked him, did you call Matt Nagy and say thank you? And he said, maybe. So, you know, there was a text or a phone call somewhere along the line. Doug tells us a lot of things, but some things he just doesn't tell us enough of. And, you know, he was a little coy in terms of answering whether or not he talked to Nagy or not.
Yeah, well, you know what? And again, there's another mirror, because that's exactly what Nagy said in his post game.
Yeah.
So someone had asked him, say, hey, did Doug reach out to you? And he said, maybe. Maybe. So, I mean, those guys are clearly on the same page when it comes to their two football teams, which I think is really, really cool. And there are other similarities, too. I think that if I'm looking at Tariq Cohen, I'm looking at Darren Sproles 10 years ago. You know, like it's kind of the same type of deal. The only difference is the defense. And I think the Bears fans are pretty familiar with what Jim Schwartz likes to do defensively. He's made a calling card out of it, and he's been really good at it throughout his tenure, whether he was with the Lions or anywhere else. What's been going on with Fletcher Cox over the last few games? Because he seems like he is a man on a mission.
Well, when you're paid one of the highest players at your position, certain things are expected of you. And Fletcher likes to measure himself by some of the other guys, one in particular, Aaron Donald. And he talks about how good friends they are, but they're completely different players. Fletcher's more of a power guy. Aaron's more of a speed guy. But Fletcher, when he wants to, he can dominate the middle of the trenches. His bull rush is nothing short of incredible. And, you know, he plays more in spurts. You know, he's been a pro bowler, but I don't think he gets a lot of the regular national accolades that some guys do. But when Fletcher Cox is on his game, he is probably the most difficult guy in the trenches to block one-on-one. Even double teams, the guy's incredible in terms of shedding double teams. And it always seems when a game is on the line at crunch time, you need a big play. Fletcher Cox somehow, some way is in the middle of it, whether he's scooping up a fumble, whether he's slapping the ball out of a quarterback's hands, or forcing the quarterback to throw the ball a little bit earlier, or stuffing a run. Fletcher Cox always seems to come up when you least expect him to make that significant play in a game.
I saw on your Twitter feed, and we're talking with Derek Gunn. You can follow him on Twitter at RealDGunn, two N's, NBCS, that you talk with Michael Bennett. I got to know, is Michael Bennett wearing wide receiver pads?
They're the smallest pads I've ever seen for a defensive lineman. But obviously they help him, because his get off the snap has been incredible. A lot of people had reservations about Michael Bennett coming here because of his past history when they signed him. But Michael Bennett has been the perfect choir boy since he's been here. He doesn't say a whole lot, doesn't talk to the media much. You know, he picks and chooses his time well. He's been playing with a foot injury for weeks. If you saw him walking around the locker room and how he drags his foot around, it's amazing that he can get out on the field on Sunday and play as well as he does. But he's been everything that the Eagles needed on the defensive side of the ball and then some. And he's got a nonstop motor. You know, he's played in numerous big games, obviously, having played with Russell Wilson and all those guys that they had on defense, all those Pro Bowl guys they had on defense in Seattle. And he's brought that attitude here. He's more of a quiet guy, but the guys in the locker room have a lot of respect for him because he's such a highly decorated player and because he's such a productive player as well.
You brought up Malcolm Jenkins in the back four of the Eagles. At times they've struggled. When they've struggled, what's gone wrong?
Well, it's basically the youth. You lose three-fourths of your starting secondary, And most teams are going to have major problems. And the Eagles had those problems. They had to rely on young players like Avante Maddox, Cravon LeBlanc, Shandon Sullivan, guys who were practice squad guys, Devontae Busby, guys they brought off the street a little more than 6 weeks ago and given them a crash course. And Malcolm Jenkins had to be the big brother and the mentor to all of these guys. And Malcolm Jenkins on that defense is like a jack of all trades and a master of all of them. But then Malcolm turned around and put more responsibilities on guys. You look at the one kid in particular, Avante Maddox. He's played the slot, he's played safety, and he's played corner. Now, corner is his natural position, and down the road, he will be a pretty good corner. He's got great acceleration and great anticipation. But when he was called upon to play safety, he did a crash course with the coaches and Malcolm, and finally Malcolm said to him, look, you're going to make the calls now. I'm not making the calls for you anymore. You have to make the calls. And the kid's done an admirable job. And once Jim Schwartz simplified the defensive schemes at the suggestion of Malcolm Jenkins, that's when the kids began to settle in and play football. Rasul Douglas, one of their draft picks from a couple of years ago, he struggled a little bit. He settled in at the corner spot. Now, we believe he's going to be a natural safety eventually, but he's played admirably at the cornerback spot as well. So it's been a lot of mix and match on that back end. And because of that, and now they're starting to get a few people back as well. Tim Jernigan is finally back in the trenches. He had the back issue, missed most of the season. Middle linebacker Jordan Hicks missed extended time because of a strained calf injury. Now he's back in the middle of that defense. And now the kids are settling in on the back end of the defense, and it's all coming together for them. So they went through their lumps. They took a beating down in New Orleans. They bounced back to win a couple, and then they gave up some big plays down in Dallas in that game. And, of course, you know, you saw it on national TV. It was Rasul Douglas who was defending Amari Cooper. The ball deflects off his hands right into Cooper's hands, a touchdown, a fluke play. So then they bounced back from that as well. So you have a nucleus of guys who went through this a year ago. They were more in control of their own destination. Everything had to go through Philadelphia, but now they have to go on the road and prove themselves. So it was a baptism out of necessity for a lot of guys on defense, and the younger guys who were called upon, especially over the last couple of weeks, stepped up and filled the void tremendously.
Darren Sproles is one of my favorite players of all time. I am amazed that he is still doing what he's doing. How in the world, after all the punishment that little guy has taken, is he still doing what he's doing?
He's a freak of nature, 35 years old and still going strong. Now, he had told us before the season that this was going to be his last year, but here he lost 7-8 games because of a hamstring injury he couldn't shake. So now he said, maybe I'll be back. But Darren Sproles keeps himself in phenomenal shape. And, you know, he doesn't take the beating like a lot of running backs. He's good for like 8 to 10 touches a game. Sometimes he might get 12 or 13 touches a game, depending on the matchup. So his body hasn't taken a significant beating like a lot of running backs have. He's a specialist. He's a return guy. He's a guy you want to match up with a linebacker in a slot. He's a guy you need a quick hit up the middle for short yard gains, or, you know, you dump it to him in a screen pass on the outside game. So he doesn't take a physical beating, but the fact that he keeps himself in such physical shape and he hasn't lost the speed at all is a tremendous testament to what Darren Sproles has been able to do throughout the course of his career.
I got a couple more minutes with Derek Gunn, and you should follow him, especially this week, Bears fan. If you want to know what's going on in Philadelphia, follow him on Twitter at RealDGunn. It has two N's in it, NBCS. A couple more things about the connections between these two teams. One is pretty evident. Alshon Jeffrey is playing receiver, used to be here, complained about not getting enough touches and wanting to win a Super Bowl. He goes on to win a Super Bowl with the Eagles, and now he gets a chance to come back to Soldier Field to play in a playoff game at Soldier Field. How has he acclimated himself in Philadelphia?
He comes in here. He doesn't say a whole lot. He just goes out and produces. You try to stoke him a little bit about certain matchups. You can't. And you guys know, he's the quietest guy you ever wanted to talk to. He does inject a little personality. Every now and then he tries to throw in a joke here or there. But it's never been about me since Alshon has been here. All he talks about is we. And he says, and we've asked him, Alshon, how do you feel about not getting the ball? He says, you know what, if I'm not getting the ball, that means somebody else is getting the ball, and I'm fine with that as long as we're winning. So Alshon has come in here and been the perfect teammate, and that's why the Eagles gave him that big contract last year. They knew what they had in him. He's a big target. He's not the fastest guy in the world, but you throw the 50-50 ball up, more than 50% of the time, he's going to win that battle, as you guys had a chance to see when he was in Chicago. He is the perfect teammate. Everybody in that locker room loves Alshon Jeffrey. Goes about his business quietly. called upon, does what he has to do, and tries to stay under the radar while he's doing it.
And the other thing, of course, is you have the Long brothers. Kyle Long was back last week. He played a half for Matt Nagy's offense, and his brother Chris is well-known and well-liked in Philadelphia. I'm sure that makes for an interesting storyline for us to follow as well.
Yeah, we'll get to talk to Chris a little bit later this week about his brother and how much he's going to talk to his brother and things like that, and what he might have said to his brother after that game, the Bears, when they put away the Vikings. But Chris Long is a very colorful character, very insightful, very well thought out. You know, he's so community involved. He's a candidate for the Walter Payton Man of the Year honors for the Philadelphia Eagles. He is a consummate pro. He's been there from day one. He was coming off that Super Bowl with the Patriots. He came in here. He set a tone with his work ethic. He set a tone verbally with players and how to approach big game situations, how to stay focused, how to put in the little bit extra time in the film room, the weight room, the practice sessions to get that much better. Nobody has anything negative to say about Chris Long. Him and Michael Bennett, they sit next to each other, and you talk about the odd couple. They're completely different guys, but they have a close bond. And they'll sit there and they have little inside jokes and things like that. But Chris Long has been everything the Philadelphia Eagles could ask of him.
Derek, after 50 years of not winning a Super Bowl, what's the city been like having a champion?
It's been intoxicating. You know, for years, I've been here 21 plus years. And this was a city that had to take a lot of verbal beatings. They were the only team in the NFC East that had not won a Super Bowl. And the other team's fan base liked to rub it in that there were 12 Super Bowl championships in the NFC East, and the Eagles were the only one that didn't have one. So it's a prideful city. And I tell you, the city erupted. It was intoxicating. When they finally beat Tom Brady, they're known as the Evil Empire in Philadelphia. When they finally beat Tom Brady and the New England Patriots to win that Super Bowl, it was just an eruption like we've never seen before. Even bigger than when the Phillies won the World Series. And people have been beating themselves in the chest. And it got to a point this season, the fan base was basically content with, oh, well, it looks like we're not going to have a chance to repeat as champions, but we got our championship. You know, they waited so long for something like this. They just wanted one. They didn't care about four, five, or six. They just wanted one Lombardi trophy. And it's been a joyride ever since it's happened for them.
Last thing I have for you. You're talking to all of Chicago right now. What do Bears fans need to know about this Eagles team?
They won't quit, no matter what. A lot of pride in that locker room, a lot of focus, a lot of tenacity, a lot of weapons on offense, a quarterback who doesn't make many mistakes with the football. He will dink and dunk his way down the field, and if the big shot is not there down the field, he will eat you up underneath. If you don't get pressure on him consistently, he will take a defense apart. Last year, you know, they were playing the vaunted Minnesota defense in the NFC Championship game when everybody thought this Vikings defense was going to come in here and shut them down, and he ripped that defense apart. Now, this time around, he's got to do it on the road, but nothing rattles this team, whether they're on the road or at home. They're going to come in. They're going to give you everything that they have. They feel right now that there's no pressure on them because nobody expected them to get into the playoffs. But after the game, you heard all the players talking about, hey, nobody wanted us in the playoffs. Now they have to deal with us. So you're going to get 100% maximum effort from this team. They're going to fight you tooth and nail. They will try to out-physical you. They will try to out-finesse you as well. The turnovers that they were not getting earlier in the season, the last three games, all of a sudden now the defense is generating turnovers. And Jim Schwartz doesn't like to blitz a lot. He likes to let his four-man wide nine technique get after the quarterback and use his rotation and keep his guys fresh. And he likes to drop guys back in coverage to flood a lot of zones so quarterbacks don't have a lot of zones to throw to. So I think it's going to be an interesting matchup. You have a team that knows how to play in these games because of what they went through a year ago in the Philadelphia Eagles. And when the odds are against them, they rallied around the cause against a very good Chicago Bears team, but a group of guys who have not been through what the Philadelphia Eagles have already been through.
Derek, I really, truly appreciate your time. Thanks so much for joining me. I'm looking forward to seeing this game on Sunday afternoon. It should be great. Thanks for all your great coverage, too, for NBC Sports Philly.
Thank you, man, for having me on. And Happy New Year's to you and yours.
Same to you. That is Derek Gunn, who covers the Eagles for NBC Sports Philly. That was top-notch stuff. I hope you got something out of it. Back after this on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Hey, the bottom of the hour is being brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. The Chicago Wolves are off to their best start since their last Calder Cup championship. Join the Wolves Wednesday and Friday for Craft Beer Arena Bar Crawl Nights and enjoy free parking for the Wolves' 25th anniversary, sponsored by Kia. A couple of minutes of non-Bears for you. Some congratulations are in order. Some Chicago athletes got married this weekend. So congratulations to Anthony Rizzo of the Cubs. He got married. He's posting all sorts of crazy pictures. Or everyone else was. He really wasn't. But like, he's out there playing golf with Dexter Fowler and Grandpa Rossi before he got married. I think Dexter Fowler's daughter was the flower girl in the wedding and all that good stuff. So congratulations to him. Congratulations to Allie Quigley and Courtney Vandersloot of The Sky. They married each other. I think they're both free agents too. I saw something on Twitter. It was like, this married couple accounted for 41% from behind the arc. That's right. Both those ladies can play. So good for them. The pictures look amazing of those two. So congratulations to them. Congratulations to Anthony Rizzo on his nuptials. As far as the NFL goes with the firings, it's always weird when we get to this time of the season and people around the league call it Black Monday, and you see all the coaches go, and in some cases, it's warranted. Even though Marvin Lewis brought a success to the Cincinnati Bengals that they haven't seen in a really long time, I feel like 16 years is enough, and they probably need new leadership. And then you see a situation like Steve Wilks in Arizona, and you're like, did you really give him enough to be successful in 1 year? And that Arizona team played hard all season. They didn't have a lot of talent, but they played hard. Even yesterday, they were playing hard. I was a little surprised by the willingness to just kind of toss him to the side, especially when there doesn't seem to be a great crop of coaching candidates. You know what bothers me? When I hear people, I know there are people who disagree with me on this, but I stand by it. When people are like, well, Mike McCarthy will be at the top of everyone's list. Why? No coach has done less with more than that guy. And now you're going to give him a team that doesn't have Aaron Rodgers on it? Good luck, bruh. Good luck with that. Enjoy what ends up happening to you. The Adam Gase thing. Although, in Miami's defense, once you bring in Cuddy, and once you're like, you know what's going to help us, you know what's going to save our season, Cuddy. There's a new Instagram account called If Jay Had Instagram, which I believe is being run by his wife. It's hysterical. Just like Jay on that show, very cavalier. He's the star of that show. Make no mistake. It's her name on the show. It's her business. It's her crazy friends. He's the star of that show, and it's tremendous. But yeah, when Adam Gase is like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to get Jay Cutler to unretire. We're going to pay him $10 million, and we're going to ride out. I think Jay did beat the Patriots, though. But they pretty much always beat the Patriots in Miami down there. I'm just not quite sure if the people in charge, like, wait, why should Jason Light still have a job in Tampa? The guy who allowed the coup of Lovie Smith for Dirk Cutter. And then they fire Dirk Cutter. They're keeping Jameis for some ungodly reason, saying that that's going to be their starter next year. You should probably draft a dude, like, for real. Because Jameis ain't it. He's good enough to get everybody fired. You go, man, look at all that talent. It's never going to come together for him. I'm not usually that hot takey, but it's never going to come together for Jameis. And then you add in that he's a bad guy on top of it. I'm not sure why you want to go to bat for him. Just saying. On Thursday, come on out. Players Pub and Grill, 1250 River Road, Prospect Heights. Great food at this place. I'll be there. Olin Krutz is my guest. 8:30 to 10, the Miller Lite Top Draft Show. We're going to have a great time. I have never got this much time to talk with Olin, ever. So I cannot wait on the eve of a playoff game to pick that guy's brain. It's going to be fun. So if you're out in the area, you should come by Players Pub and Grill, 1250 River Road, Prospect Heights. We're going to take a break. Chris Emma from the Score staff is in the house. We're going to talk about this Bears team. He's around it every day. We'll see what he has to say about their run to a 12-4 record and a playoff game against the Eagles. It's next here on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Lawrence Holmes back here with you. 10 o'clock tonight. We're going full boat show and a lot of Bears, wall-to-wall Bears. So, Chris Emma, who covers the Bears for us here at The Score, was nice enough to come in studio and hang out with me on New Year's Eve. Emma, how are you?
Lawrence, happy New Year. Good to be with you.
Okay. First thing, before we talk about the Bears, you covered Northwestern for a really long time. How real do you think the interest that the Packers have in Pat Fitzgerald?
I think the Packers' interest is very real. And it starts with Mark Murphy, the president there, the man who hired Pat Fitzgerald into that role when Randy Walker tragically passed away back in 2006. He got to know Pat Fitzgerald as a coach, as a person, and develop that respect there. So it's no surprise that Pat Fitzgerald's been linked to this job. Does Pat Fitzgerald want it? That's the question. And there's a lot of different elements in play. I mean, he's going to get a great financial offer from the Packers, maybe from another team too. It comes down to, does he want to leave the comforts of his alma mater, leaving his hometown, moving his family from the Chicagoland area, away from his extended family and everybody else? There's a lot of elements to this decision, and it's going to be a very difficult one for him if he gets that offer.
So you're not surprised at all that he's on the Packers list?
No, just because of the Mark Murphy connection, it makes it a natural look. But you also kind of look around this climate right now, this coaching carousel. There's 8 openings right now, maybe even some more coming, too. It's not the greatest crop of coaches. I mean, there's no obvious, you know, Matt Nagy was the name people were looking at last year, different names like that. There's not a lot of those this year, so you're seeing teams be creative or go to the retread coaches as well. So I'm not overly surprised we're hearing Fitz's name mentioned.
All right, now let's talk about the team that's really important. Your Chicago Bears. You cover the Bears. You've been with them for the last couple of years for us at The Score. I was thinking about this driving in today. One of the things I wanted to ask you, when was the point where you felt like, you know, maybe it's not just talk. These guys could be legitimate contenders.
You know, a couple times, I guess I'd say. The Buccaneers game is deceiving because I think they were 2-1 at the time, and there was a thought that they were a little bit more legit. But to see the Bears blow them out at Soldier Field, it kind of opened your eyes a little bit. The Bucs faded from there. The Bears kind of went through some ups and downs after that, losing 2 games in a row, Dolphins and the Patriots from there. It kind of started to hit a little bit when they hit that stretch, capped off with the 3 NFC North games, and then you go out and you beat the Rams following that. I'm sorry, I got it out of order there. But the 3 NFC North games in a row, the Vikings, Lions. Yeah, it's 16-game season. You lose track of it a little bit.
The Thanksgiving, 3 games in 12 days against divisional opponents, and they take care of business in all 3 with Chase Daniel out there for the game, for one of the games.
Exactly. And that was an eye-opening moment, the way they were able to, because you learned a little bit about this team's toughness and kind of the culture that's in place. You hear culture talked a lot about in the NFL. What does it mean? It can be in a lot of different things throughout a season. It can be displayed in a lot of different ways. But when you win 3 division games in the span of 12 days, you have a really short gap between that Sunday nighter against the Vikings to that Thursday morning in Detroit. You learned a little bit about what the Bears are made of and kind of the toughness and the culture that's in play. So you could see from there, okay, this isn't just a good team. This can be a great team. The Rams game really cemented it because you were talking about a team that everybody said, this is the team to beat in the NFC North. I mean, this is the group, 54 points a couple weeks before. You knew what this offense was made of. How would the defense match it? They kept him out of the end zone. I mean, that was the thing where you said, okay, this isn't just a great team. Maybe this is a special team that can get to the Super Bowl, that can make that run in January. They fell a game shy of the first-round bye, and it was disappointing, obviously, because you think about week one in Green Bay or Brock Osweiler in Miami, Saquon Barkley in New Jersey. But all that said, this team has a shot to go deep because of the way that they can take away the football and protect the football. That turnover margin at 13 is plus 13 on the season, third in the league, number one in takeaways. I mean, you feel good about that formula and what the quarterback Mitchell Trubisky can do in being efficient with this offense. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of different eye-opening moments this season, but now you're starting to see the formula that's in place as they move into January.
How would you describe the impact of Khalil Mack?
You're seeing it. It's in the numbers. It's there, and it's not just his numbers. The 12 and a half sacks. He was a half sack behind the Raiders. It's unbelievable.
It's amazing.
I mean, it's there in the individual numbers. You don't have to look far to see what a special player he is, but you also have to look at what he's brought to the rest of this defense. And Vic Fangio back in January said, Bears need the good players to be great. Khalil Mack helped make him great. And they made each other great, too. Don't get me wrong. I mean, it's some guys like Eddie Jackson or Akeem Hicks, they help a Khalil Mack, or they'll help each other become better players. And Vic Fangio's had his mark all over this defense, too. Khalil Mack has helped elevate this group. Top 10? Maybe they would have been top 5 without Khalil Mack this season, probably on the fringe around there. This is one of the best defenses in the league. And you're talking about an NFL in 2018, Lawrence, where this is all about offense, these high-scoring teams, and it's unbelievable what you're seeing in some games here. The Bears can beat any of these offenses on any given day because of how good this defense is, and Mack's a big part of that.
Chris Emma joining me here. He covers the Bears for The Score, and you can read his work on 670thescore.com. You brought up Vic Fangio. What do you think the chances are that Vic Fangio gets a head coaching opportunity?
I think they are strong. I think there's a very good chance that Vic Fangio is gone after this season. He's 60 years old, and he's been in this league going into his third decade now. He's been an assistant in NFL or a football coach for 37 seasons now. You have those aspirations, right? I mean, that's the highest level of coaching, football coaching, NFL head coach. He's been slighted that opportunity many times where he was deserving. The number one that stands out was in San Francisco back when they fired Jim Harbaugh. Fangio should have been a candidate. They hardly even acknowledged him in that search, and
they
hired Jim Tomsula.
Right.
Yes,
yeah, go to the D-line
over.
Coach.
Exactly. He's been slighted on this, and at this point, I think up until this season, and he's kind of hinted at this before, he never saw an opportunity like this coming ever again, and especially he was passed up by the Bears. I mean, the Bears had a chance. They knew what he could bring, that kind of continuity in place. And they went with a 40-year-old coach who's been in the league for 10 seasons. He's probably the coach of the year, Matt Nagy. But you have to feel like Vic Fangio was slighted by that, too, in a way, because the Bears knew how good he can be and what his impact was on that defense. So I had my questions back in January whether he was going to come back to Chicago or if he was going to say, I'm done with this. I'm on to the Green Bay or wherever else it may be, that next stop. Here's a chance now where he's got two interviews set up right now, the Broncos and Dolphins, if I'm right. He's going to get those looks. He's probably going to get some more interviews set up. He might get an offer here, and I think if he gets that offer, he's going to take it because he knows how many more interviews is he going to have left in his career. I mean, how many more different opportunities will there be for Vic Fangio to be an NFL head coach? He knows the clock's ticking at the age of 60 in terms of his coaching career and the longevity he wants to have in this league. So now is the time for him. And he's maximized. I mean, he's leading one of the number one defense in the league, number one in takeaways, a defense that really resembles its coordinator here. This is his prime opportunity, and I think if he gets that offer, he's gone.
You're at Hallis Hall every day. You've been around since they went through this hiring process with Nagy. What's he like, and what impresses you the most about him?
You know, it's been really fascinating to be around this guy. I could get a sense of it kind of early on when they first hired him, and I was told, by different people around him who got to know him, this guy's different. You think, well, okay, what happens when he loses that first game? And he did pretty badly. Week one, Green Bay, 20-0 lead on the Packers. You get a sense of what makes this guy unique. And he said it in the aftermath, after that game, and moving on down the road. He could have been mad. He could have stood up there and been furious. But he said, listen, guys, we're going to learn from this. We're going to become better from this. He's a guy who's glass half full at all times, looking for the positive, trying to find any mistake that he makes or his team makes and make it a lesson to make them better. This team's clearly better from week one, what could have been an awful moment in Matt Nagy in his career. He used it to make this group better, and you can make an argument that the Bears are a better team and what they are now because of what they experienced in Green Bay. That's a representation of Matt Nagy as a coach and as a leader of men. And you see why these guys respect him so much. I mean, Prince Amukamara yesterday said, listen, he doesn't want to be the coach of the year, but we want it for him. They respected the way that Matt Nagy came out there in the second half with these starters out in Minnesota and said, let's go for the win here. And the players said they were fighting for him because they knew he's taken flak for this before, that preseason game in August. People were saying, what's this guy doing? Why is he bucking convention? Why is he doing this? Because that's Matt Nagy, and that's who he is. He's been himself the entire way on this job. He's been genuine as can be. And that's not with reporters. That's with players. It's with everybody in the building. There's a beauty in it in that he's been himself the entire way. He hasn't changed one bit. And with that, they've been successful.
What surprised you most about this team this season?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, 14-34 in 3 years speaks for itself. 12-4, the turnaround, it's dramatically different. I think it's just the turnaround itself. I feel like it's an easy answer, but the fact that it all clicks so fast, and there's so many different layers of this.
I mean, you're right, because it felt like the – I would joke that they were the NFC Browns. Like, that's what it was starting to feel like. The 2 years of Trestman and 3 years of Fox, it just felt like the organization was going nowhere.
It's the way that so many players on this team were there the last few years. I mean, obviously there's some new faces and new pieces that have cemented this thing. But there's so many guys who have taken those growing leaps and bounds. They're making those jumps that you wanted to see, and then some. I mean, somebody like a Kyle Fuller is a perfect example of it. You know, they didn't decline this option a couple years ago. They were almost reluctant to bring him back in a lot of ways. The regime was not sold on him, and here he is with 7 interceptions, a terrific season, a Pro Bowl player. He's only one example of this. Eddie Jackson making that jump in his second season, becoming one of the best safeties in the league. There's so many different examples of how the Bears have become a better team. The quarterback, of course, you're seeing growth in Mitchell Trubisky, and obviously skepticism's warranted because he was the number 2 overall pick, but you feel like at least the arrow's trending up. It's going the right way. Everything about this season has clicked and come together where this team has made the biggest turnaround in football this season. Texans are at 11 wins. That's terrific, but the Bears are at 12, and they're a team that can win the Super Bowl this season. It's so many different layers of this and so many different places where it'll be easier to do in the postseason or at the end of this postseason run and say, here's why. You kind of look at the details a little bit further, but it happened so fast and it's not going anywhere because of the way these contracts are built, the way this organization's set up. I mean, the Bears are in position here to be the NFC North first place team, the division champions, you know, a team that's getting that first round bye in the years to come and making that run. I mean, they're set for success here for years to come.
Talking football and Bears with Chris Emma, who covers the Bears for us here at 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Why should Bears fans want to play the Philadelphia Eagles?
You know, it's you look in the hindsight, you say, I'd love to see Kirk Cousins back out there in Soldier Field and see the guy who looked to be a disaster yesterday. But if you're a Bears fan, you have to feel like this team can beat anybody. You have to have that confidence. Even if it's not true, you don't necessarily feel it. Because up at Halas Hall, I mean, Matt Nagy, Mitchell Trubisky, Khalil Mack, whoever it is, they all feel like they can beat any team on any given day. They have that faith. They feel really strongly about it. And it's perfect in a way. So many parallels between the Eagles and the Bears. I wrote about it today on 670thescore.com. It's kind of a fitting matchup in a lot of ways. And Matt Nagy then went out and said it today. Well, he kind of followed Doug Peterson on that track through Kansas City. Now he wants to follow him to win a Super Bowl here. So everybody in that building feels like they can go out there and win a championship this season. The Eagles are tough. They're hot. Nick Foles, this thing's happening again. It's hard to explain. I think everybody in the world who watches Nick Foles is saying, where's this coming from? It's happening again. But he hasn't faced Khalil Mack this year. He didn't face him last year either. I mean, it's a different animal now. And this Bears defense, they can stifle the best offenses in football. I have a lot of more questions on the other side of the ball. Is how is Mitchell Trubisky going to handle the pressure from the Eagles? Is he going to be able to manage the football well where he can take advantage of those mismatches in the secondary? Because they're there on this defense. It's all set up for the Bears to win this game and maybe even win it going away on these guys. The Eagles are playing hot. They've won 4 out of 5. They're a good football team. They're defending champs. But they also got a lot of flaws this season, too. Let's see if the Bears can take advantage of them, because I think they feel like they can.
All right, let me flip it. Why should Bears fans not want to see the Philadelphia Eagles on Sunday?
Cody Parkey? No, I mean, it's... Look, it's... I kid there. We've seen some of the bad of the Bears as well. I mean, we've seen this team really struggle, and it's been against lesser opponents. I mean, the Dolphins and the Osweiler thing back in October.
The Giants,
and that's a team they should have beaten. The thing that I keep coming back to, you think about that game. It was one of their biggest wins of the season against the Rams. Quarterback was bad. He had the big stage, and he was coming off the injury. He said that's why he struggled. But you wonder if he's going to get too overwhelmed on this playoff stage or let the spotlight get the best of him. I think that's probably the biggest concern, more than Cody Parkey. They have concerns at the kicking position, no doubt.
Well,
but
is that legitimate? Like, how worried are they? Because I can tell you just from watching my Twitter feed, watching your Twitter feed, Bears fans are really worried that that's going to be the thing that keeps them from advancing in the playoffs. It's going to come down to a game tying or a game winning kick. Or a kick that's going to have them chasing points the rest of the game, and Cody Parkey's going to miss it.
Yeah, you look at the track record before in the season, you should feel comfortable. But the way that the Bears, from Matt Nagy down to his teammates, have defended Cody Parkey and backed him after these misses, it's nice. It's a nice story because you have the support of your teammate. But it also kind of speaks to how do these guys really feel about their kicker? Do they have that faith that he's going to make the big kick? We see Matt Nagy run some 2-point conversions and get a little creative with it. Mm-hmm. Does Matt Nagy trust his kicker to make these kicks? I mean, look, 3 points is a lot to give up when you're facing the Saints in the Superdome or the Rams out in Los Angeles. Like, there's not a lot of margin for error for a team where, you know, the Bears haven't blown a lot of teams out this season. So they're going to need every point on the board. And you hope the kicker comes through. I mean, it's a good background. Like I said before, they gave him a 4-year deal, believing that he can bring some consistency to that position. But the way they speak about Cody Parkey up in House Hall makes me think they might not have a lot of faith in him, and they kind of question where his confidence is right now.
Okay. Take me inside your reporter's notebook. What are you paying attention to this week? What's important this week for you to find out?
Kind of what I was talking about before with Mitchell Trubisky and the way that they've managed him. We've seen a different game plan from, say, the Buccaneers game or even – when they started kind of evolving it in September into October, really kind of making it about Mitch making plays and being the centerpiece of this offense, they've kind of dialed it back a little bit. And they've not said it openly. You know, it kind of speaks to, I think Matt Nagy understands where Trubisky is in his development. And there's more to be accomplished this offseason and the next offseason. There's a lot more in store for Mitch Trubisky down the road. But I think right now they're realizing, okay, we need to aim for efficiency with him. And you've seen a little bit more of that, taking the layups. That's a term you hear a lot from Mark Helfrich and from Matt Nagy and even Dave Ragone at times. I think they're going to position him for a lot more of those layups and some of the quick routes, keeping it within 10 yards where he's at his very best when he's inside 10 yards. And ideally, most quarterbacks are, but you've seen a lot of his workload come from keeping the ball within the 10-yard mark. I think you're going to see a lot of that in the playoffs. And I'm curious, I won't get the answer this week until Sunday, but what their plan is, you're going to see a little bit more of it as they get into this game, and how much faith they really have in the quarterback at this stage in his development. Now, year two in the NFL, year one with Matt Nagy in this offense. I think you're going to see a lot of Jordan Howard on Sunday.
Okay. Well, Emma, I appreciate you jumping in studio. I know you got dinner plans and all sorts of stuff to ring in the new year. Thanks for stopping in. It's appreciated. Thanks for the hard work covering the team this year, and hopefully you get to cover a few more weeks of Bears football.
You know, it's been fun. It's been really cool. I mean, I grew up in this city, and I got an appreciation of the way it comes together with the Bears in the playoffs. So to be a part of it, to be watching it every Sunday, it's been a pleasure. It's been fun.
That is Chris Emma. We're going to talk more Bears after this on The Score.